Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Today, in a bipartisan way, the House demonstrated that no one is above the law, not even the President of the United States.
A difficult and historic day for America. Donald John Trump, the 45th President of the United States, impeached for a second time, something that has never happened before. It is a political battle that continues to play itself out even with just 7 days left before the inauguration of Joe Biden. And tonight, we're going to break down the day, but we're also going to look ahead at what this means, not only for the D.C. area, but the nation over the next week and perhaps the next year. My guests are former Maryland Congresswoman Donna Edwards and Howard University political science professor Dr. Robinson Woodward Burns. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Congresswoman Edwards and Dr. Woodward Burns, thank you so much for joining this conversation on this really important day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I want to play something for you, Congresswoman, and I need you to react. You spent time on the Hill, obviously, as an elected official, a public servant, and just kind of share with me your thoughts about these final words from Nancy Pelosi today.
That Donald Trump is a clear and present danger to our country, and that once again, we honored our oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help us God. And now, I sadly, and with a heart broken over what this means to our country, of a president who would incite insurrection, will sign the engrossment of the article of impeachment.
Congresswoman.
You know, I have to tell you, I mean, both that moment and also listening to the debate over the course of the day, it said to me the seriousness, with which the speaker approached this, but also Democrats. Nobody wanted to impeach the president. As, members said, they didn't come to the Congress to impeach the president. But the president's behavior, his words, and what happened in the Capitol on January 6th did not leave people who believe in the republic, who shared the view that we have a peaceful transfer of power, could not allow Donald Trump's words and his behavior to stand. And, I got chills when I heard Nancy Pelosi today, because the single article of impeachment was for insurrection, a president of the United States essentially trying to overthrow the elected government to prevent it from doing its constitutional duty. And so it isn't just that the president has been impeached for a second time, and that is a mark in history, a stain in history, but he was impeached for insurrection.
Yeah. Dr. Woodward Burns, this process today was not like the last time. This was not about allegations of collusion and strong-arming Ukraine, and that was difficult for people to understand. You had to have a whole lot of folks explaining what that was about. But this was so simple. The accusation was so simple, and yet only 10 Republicans decided to cross the aisle to vote for the impeachment. What does that say to you?
We exist in a time of extraordinary partisan polarization. We know, for example, that in the GOP, Donald Trump even after inciting an insurrection against the United States government, has 80% approval within the Republican Party. How is that possible? If you look at the changes in the GOP electorate and in the GOP base over the last 10 years, we see in aggregate the electorate is getting older, whiter, more rural, and less educated than it was. And as Donald Trump pushes out from the Republican Party more moderate Republicans, former voters of color in the Republican Party, we see the GOP is getting smaller in the national electorate. Donald Trump has never had a positive approval rating at any point in his term. He's the first president to have that distinction. But within the GOP, as the GOP electorate gets smaller, Donald Trump gets more and more popular, and he plays to this more and more. If we look at the Republicans who voted to block certification of the Electoral College vote itself, something of an outrage. This is close to a concerted coup against the United States merely to block Electoral College certification. The Republicans who supported that are Republicans representing districts in which Donald Trump was proportionately more popular. And so we see, because Donald Trump is so popular in this increasingly small Republican Party in the electorate, because he's, as a result, very popular in the House, we see the House standing with him. Now, the question, I think, for the Senate, right, a chamber that's smaller, that has a smaller Republican caucus, that has, again, Mitch McConnell non-committal about the Senate trial, I think the question is whether we'll see a repetition of that when these articles are transmitted to the Senate for the president's trial then.
A few moments ago, the president released a video. I'm just going to play a portion of it, Congresswoman Edwards, and talk to me about what you're hearing and what you don't hear.
I unequivocally condemn the violence that we saw last week. Violence and vandalism have absolutely no place in our country and no place in our movement. No true supporter of mine could ever endorse political violence. No true supporter of mine could ever disrespect law enforcement or our great American flag. In Washington, D.C., we are bringing in thousands of National Guard members to secure the city and ensure that a transition can occur safely and without incident.
Congresswoman Edwards, what was that in your
mind? Harold, I listened to that entire statement, and I think, you know, the thing that strikes me, first of all, the president is always on script when he's on script. The challenge is that for the bulk of his presidency, including last week, that he was away from the script, and we saw what his words and his actions resulted in the Capitol. The other thing that strikes me about that statement is that he says no true supporter of his. Well, in fact, there were thousands of his true supporters waving Trump flags, hanging Trump flags from the Capitol, who indeed were true supporters of his. And so it doesn't even, his statement doesn't even acknowledge the reality of what happened and what he has wrought within his Republican Party.
I think it's just really interesting also that there was no mention of the indictment today, the impeachment, I should say, Dr. Woodward Burns. Can you kind of paint a picture, you know, for me about what this really says about not only the president, but what it says about the day? Because I would argue that nothing has changed, and it is very, very likely that nothing will change with President Trump even 7 days from now when Joe Biden takes over.
Certainly. The structural forces that made it possible for Trump to become president have not changed. I think, again, the 74 million people voted for him. Those people are still likely to support a candidate that looks like him and speaks like him in 2024. That might be Donald Trump. He might be forbidden from running from office through the 14th Amendment or perhaps through Senate removal. These are sort of long shots. If he doesn't run again, we can bet that someone like Senator Hawley or Cotton might run on a similar platform and do it more competently. I think, again, the underlying white nationalism that motivated voters to elect Donald Trump in the first place have not gone away. One other thing to think about, the Republican Party is really struggling to win votes nationally. They've won the national popular vote in the presidential election once since 1992. They are finding that in order to win the presidency, they're going to need to effectively try to do things like cheating election, blocking electoral college certification, or recently a scheme in Wisconsin to help unbind legislators from the outcome of the popular vote. I think, again, as the GOP struggles to capture a larger part of the national electorate as a result of Trumpism, it'll start considering these counter-democratic motions to essentially try to cheat the national vote.
But Dr. Woodward Burns, historically, hasn't the Electoral College always favored Republicans?
It often does. If you look at 2020 and 2016, Republicans were able to win the presidency, even losing the national popular vote, in part because the Electoral College slightly overrepresents rural areas, and Republicans have been gaining larger portions of the rural vote recently. But what they're doing is essentially ratcheting up the stakes here. So a bill in Georgia recently would allow Republican-controlled legislature would allow Republican legislators to simply pick their electors to send to the Electoral College, effectively making the outcome of the presidential election irrelevant to their choice. So even though they have an ingrained, built-in advantage in the Electoral College, they're trying to get even more as the party becomes less popular nationally.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are breaking down this historic day, not only on Capitol Hill, but for the nation. President Trump impeached for a second time in less than 13 months. If you have a comment or a question about the day, or what may be happening in the days to come, weeks to come, months to come, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go to Walter. Walter, first call. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everybody. I have one, those Republicans who were part of the riot, they need to be checked out and also to be kicked out. Because if they're loyal to Donald Trump, they'll do anything. They need to be investigated, and they need to go. Mm-hmm. For Donald Trump, I'm calling him the Benedict Arnold, because he's a traitor to America, and he disrespects his presidency, and he disrespects the oath of the Constitution. And let's not forget that Mitch McConnell has the power to do this quickly. He took 3 days to get Judge Bennett to confirm her as Supreme Court Justice, but he doesn't want to take this because now he wants to wait till Chuck Schumer becomes the majority leader. This whole thing is just so much that the Republican Party is the radical right. And right now, those people stand between, I heard this afternoon, we want unity. If that was Biden who did this, if they want his head and blood, period.
Walter, thank you so much for your comment. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So, Congresswoman Edwards, what about what Walter is saying? He said that it was like the confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett was on speed dial. There's no question about that. But now we have Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, saying there isn't enough time. He hasn't committed to bringing the Senate back into session before Tuesday of next week. The inauguration is Wednesday. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that, you know, Harold, the latest word is that Senator McConnell has explicitly said that he is not planning to bring up these the article of impeachment for a trial in the Senate before the Senate is slated to come back before the inauguration. And so I think that is clear. I will say that in terms of things like being able to call witnesses and the, you know, the process that with Chuck Schumer in charge and Democrats holding even the slim majority with what will be Vice President, the President of the Senate, Kamala Harris, that there may be the ability to conduct a trial that where we at least get witnesses on the record and force Republicans to ask themselves in the Senate whether they're going to stand on the side of the Republic or stand on the side of the insurrection. I mean, that really is the question. And so, you know, whether the trial were to take place now or afterwards, still, I think it will be relevant and important because the prospect of being able to say to Donald Trump, not only will we convict you, but we will also prevent you from running for any public office again, I think is a really important statement for the Republic. You know, one thing that before, and I want to turn over to Dr. Woodward Burns. But,
well, hold on. I don't mean to interrupt. I've got to take a break, but please don't forget your thought because I want you to finish your thought. And I have some more questions on several things that you shared with us. So please stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And if you're on the phone, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Make sure you download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. This discussion continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are breaking down this historic day, the second impeachment of President Donald Trump. My guests are former Maryland Congresswoman Donna Edwards and Howard University political science professor Dr. Robinson Woodward Burns. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Congresswoman, please continue your point.
No, I was just going to conclude. I mean, Walter mentioned this idea of what's going to happen with these members of Congress who may have played some role or other, we don't know yet, with regard to what happened at the Capitol and maybe their communications with the president. There have been those reports in the press.
Yes.
And so I think that this time between now and whenever the trial takes place, there's going to be a lot to unfold in terms of evidence that will evolve and perhaps some looking into what has happened with these particular members of Congress that will play a role, I think, in furthering the case for a conviction of Donald Trump in the Senate.
Let me go to the phone lines real quick, and then I want to pick back up on some really important points. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Robert, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Robert. What's on your mind?
Okay, hello. Thanks for taking my call, but please tell us that this man cannot pardon himself. Where in America can somebody be their own judge and jury? To me, that seems legally impossible. And also, he talks about pardoning his children. How can you give somebody a blanket pardon when you have not yet been charged or indicted with anything? I mean, how can you do that? Please give me some direction on both of those points.
Dr. Woodward Burns, I'll let you try to tackle that.
Yeah, I appreciate Robert's question there. If you look at the Constitution, the president does have a pardoning power. Now, So the Constitution does not specifically grant or expressly grant the power to self-pardon. Now, some have speculated that doesn't mean that the president cannot do this. It is clear, though, that this only applies to federal crimes. So crimes under state law, the president cannot preemptively self-pardon. Now, there are pending state cases, or I should say there's a grand jury in New York pursuing a case against the president. And so that's the sort of case for which the president's preemptive self-pardon would not be available. It's not clear whether in the next 7 days he'll do this. He's sort of hemmed and hawed back and forth on it. But it's, again, worth remembering that even if he does, it's not clear that it's constitutionally valid, and it certainly doesn't save him from pending investigations of state crimes he may have committed.
And what about his children?
If he is able to pardon himself, that's not clear, but he can pardon other people. And so his children may be exempt, again, for federal crimes, but not necessarily for state crimes.
Mm. What about the insurrectionists, Dr. Woodward Burns? Because
certainly,
these are federal crimes.
Yes.
Is it possible that he could pardon them?
It's plausible that he could. There's another means of sanction for holding members of Congress, House members, and Senate members supporting the president responsible. And that's in the 14th Amendment's third section. And essentially what that says is that no one can be a senator or representative of Congress or hold any other office if that person has engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States or given, quote, aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. This was drafted and ratified in 1868 to prevent ex-Confederates from reentering the federal government, and it was used. This was one of the key parts of Reconstruction in the 1860s and 70s. Now, Representatives Cori Bush and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have introduced resolutions to invoke the 14th Amendment's third section to expel members of Congress who have aided the president's insurrection, supported it, or who have moved to block certification of the House votes for the Electoral College. Now, I think either of these would fit with the use of the 14th Amendment as it was invoked. There's good precedent for that. And it fits the explicit use of the text, the third section of the 14th Amendment. So I think that's a promising way of sanctioning these members of Congress who supported the president's insurrection.
That 1868 measure you just mentioned to prevent ex-Confederates from reentering the government, the irony is not lost on me, considering all of the Confederate flags that we saw flying during that attack on the U.S. Capitol. Robert, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So this is what I want to talk about when we're talking about kind of breaking down the day, Congresswoman Edwards. There have been reports, and I'm sure you've heard them, that one of the reasons why there were not more Republicans voting with Democrats during this impeachment process today is because, one, they may have received threats from some constituents, and the fact that the president, it has been reported, had issued some veiled threats in phone calls with some GOP members, trying to keep that coalition together and not have us see more GOP votes. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've read some of those reports as well, and I think it's really unfortunate that people, members of Congress, did not just stand up to uphold their oaths. I mean, you know, anybody who gets into public service, I mean, your job is a higher order. And so I actually don't really think that we should be, you know, taking any comfort or sympathy for members of Congress who decided that they were more interested and concerned about their self-preservation than they were the preservation of the union. And that may seem, you know, harsh, but at the same time, this is the hazard duty that you signed up for. And the members of Congress that I know who've, many of the women of color, for example, in the Democratic caucus, have been harassed and threatened, requiring protection over the course of the last 4 years because of the president's rhetoric. And so I don't really have a lot of sympathy for those who know that the president committed impeachable offenses but decided themselves to stay quiet in the pack with people who sided with the insurrection rather than siding with the Republic.
So talk to me a little bit about your time on the Hill, because one of the things that I find really interesting when I was watching the debate today was this was head-snapping rhetoric from Republicans. You know these people, and we often hear reports about, well, this is what they're saying publicly and this is what they're saying privately. And yet I would argue that some of the things that I heard today from the Republicans as it relates to Black Lives Matter, so-called Antifa, and some of the other things which, quite honestly, would be considered dog whistle racist. So for you, when you served, is this who they were, or were they just speaking to their own constituency?
No, I think sadly, for a number of those members, when I heard them speak today, I think that's exactly who they were before and who they are now, the things that I heard. And I think one of the things that has happened in the Trump presidency is he's been able to give people a platform and a voice, even members of Congress, to say those things out loud. And so we don't really even talk about dog whistles anymore, because why talk about a dog whistle when it's on a foghorn? And I think that, you know, when I heard today were people defending the president by threatening additional violence, by saying that maybe people would get angrier or that it would cause the president to become a martyr, and so therefore you should not, you know, vote against his insurrection. These were insane arguments, weak arguments on the part of Republicans defending a lawless president.
One of the other things I heard today, Dr. Woodward Burns, was, and it reminded me of the last impeachment process, where the Democrats today were talking about the insurrection, the killing of the U.S. Capitol police officer, and the deaths of others on January 6th. And the Republicans were talking about, here you go again, attacking the president. And it was amazing to me that, again, and I say this all the time, that people who you would hope would be of good conscience would talk about what is, and what is January 6th, 2021, not 2020, not 2019, not Hillary Clinton, not any of those other kinds of things. I just found that incredible.
I think that's right. If you look at the way members of the Republican Party consume media, it's completely different from the way mainstream or Democratic voters consume media. There are divorced media streams, and on the right specifically, increasingly conspiratorial media streams that completely disavow the president's incitement to insurrection on January 6th. And so these members of Congress, you know, when they speak from the floor, they're trying to speak directly to their constituents who don't believe the president is at fault. And in this sense, they're able to exist in this sort of parallel media world. I think one thing to sort of keep in mind is, again, as the GOP becomes a smaller and smaller share of the American electorate, is that they're essentially trying to work within this sort of media stream and work within this smaller electorate without trying to build outside of it and capture, say, swing voters, median voters, of which there are fewer now because of polarization. But again, we see members, particularly in the House, particularly in Trump heavy districts, really not trying to build any bridges, but speak directly to their base.
But to that, but let me say, you talk about a shrinking Republican electorate, 71 million votes is nothing to sneeze at.
Yes.
That's a lot.
It's the highest number that any president, Republican presidential candidate has ever gotten. And it represents almost a quarter of the U.S. population. It's a very serious threat if these this kind of turnout continues. I think that the GOP has sort of made this bargain in which they're essentially lockstepping behind Trump in hope that he can create high turnout in a very committed, increasingly white, increasingly rural, increasingly low-educated base. And they're really giving up on appealing to anyone but those people. The fact that they're not, you know, trying to build a broader coalition does not mean that that coalition is going to fail in the future.
Mm. Congresswoman Edwards, if you were still on the Hill, would you feel safe?
I think in this environment, and I mean, I've been actually hearing from a number of my former colleagues over the last week or so, and, you know, credit to the National Guard that's been now called out and the Capitol Police who are there, that they're looking after members' safety. But it would trouble me tremendously to walk from one's office to the Capitol to vote, to walk outside on the sidewalks, which is something that's actually quite normal for members of Congress. But to know that those doors and windows were breached in such a violent way. And so I think that members right now, you know, especially the ones that I hear from, really want to know that that the Capitol is now, again, a secure workplace, but also a place that when the pandemic is over can be open to the public once again, because it is, in fact, the people's house. And so, I mean, I think we have a lot of things to balance and emotions to balance given the violence of the attack on the Capitol on January 6th.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, more of this conversation about this historic day, the impeachment of President Donald Trump. When we come back, we're going to take a look forward at what all of this means between now and next Wednesday and beyond. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue breaking down this historic day, the second impeachment of President Donald Trump. What part do you believe Congresswoman Edwards trust moving forward will play in how things get done on Capitol Hill? Because this is the worst thing that has happened in modern American legislative history. I can't imagine how you can now look across the aisle at some of your colleagues and not, as the young people say, feel some kind of way.
Well, as you know, Harold, I think some of that you heard expressed on the floor of the Capitol. I was particularly struck by Congresswoman Cori Bush's statement from Missouri on, you know, on what has transpired. And I think, you know, I agree with the phrase that there can not be any unity until there's accountability. And that means accountability of the President of the United States, but also accountability for members of Congress, almost 60% of whom supported undermining the Electoral College and not certifying the election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. 60% of the Republicans in the House. You saw those same numbers who showed up today and voted against impeachment. And so I think until Republicans are willing to both acknowledge the free and fair election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, until those same people are willing to at least cast some sanction on Donald Trump, then it's going to be hard for people to work together. And I think many Democrats want to move forward on an agenda around COVID relief, on restoring the economy, on rebuilding infrastructure. And they may have to do that with all of the Democratic votes and then a smattering of Republican votes to get their legislation into the Senate and then on to the to President Biden's desk. But it's going to be tough.
Dr. Woodward Burns, as polarized and as tribal as the nation is right now, why was today so important?
This is an historical day in a few senses. It's the first time a president has been impeached twice. That's something that when school children learn about this, they'll have that marker on Donald Trump, and hopefully we'll ask why he was impeached a second time. It's also important in that it gives the opportunity for conviction in the Senate and sanctioning of the president, hopefully or possibly by forbidding him to run for office again. I think the third and sort of final point to Congresswoman Edwards' point is that there are not too many Republicans who are going to side with Democrats going forward. Democrats have razor-thin margins in both chambers. They're going to need a few Republicans on votes to sort of carry motions in the future. And so Democrats need to be ready to move on without Republicans or with only a few Republicans. There are some really important measures that can make it possible to broaden the electorate, to build out the Democratic coalition in the future. Things like H.R. 1, essentially, rebuilding the Voting Rights Act, which was dismantled by the Supreme Court in a 2013 decision. H.R. 51, granting D.C. a statehood and two Democratic senators. These are things that can sort of help rebuild democracy and improve the Democratic Party standing. But, in the immediate run, I think Democrats need to be willing, if possible or if necessary, to go it alone, even with very thin margins.
But Dr. Woodward Burns, here's the other difficulty. When we still have 7 days before inauguration, and House Speaker Pelosi has said that she believes that Donald Trump is dangerous, today's events, today's impeachment did not remove the president. It would not remove the president. And while we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day or even when I get off the air, it's likely that the president will not resign. And the House Speaker has said that she wanted to move this process forward, particularly as it relates to the 25th Amendment, to remove the president to keep America safe from, the uncertainty that has been his wheelhouse. So with that said, from your perspective, are you concerned about what the president may do between now and Wednesday?
Certainly. I am concerned. The president incited an insurrection against the United States government. He attempted a coup in order to retain power. These are things that are without precedent. Those specific things have not happened before in American history. And so for that reason, he should be removed. The 25th Amendment is the appropriate mechanism to do that. And Mike Pence refused to invoke the 25th Amendment. His reasons are unclear. Despite the president having personally insulted him, despite the president having dispatched a crowd which called for the execution of Mike Pence by hanging and erected a gallows outside of the Capitol, despite that, Mike Pence refused to invoke the 25th Amendment. This is a failure of the amendment and certainly also a failure of Mike Pence. We can only hope that the president in his remaining week in office does not incite further insurrection against the United States.
Congresswoman Edwards, what is that about, the Vice President Pence situation? I think Dr. Woodward Burns just laid it out. I mean, I think the technical term is thrown under the bus.
And, well, he was run over.
His life, as Professor Woodward Burns just said, was threatened. And Lord knows what may have happened had he not been swept away by Secret Service and taken to a safe place. So politically, does he, from your perspective, does he just not care? Is he constantly thinking about politics and not America? Your thoughts about that?
Well, it's quite a puzzling thing for me to think about Mike Pence, because he doesn't really gain anything. The mob was out to get him, as you described, But politically, if he wants to run for president and he does have presidential aspirations, which part of that Republican coalition is he trying to piece together? It makes no sense politically. And I will say, I mean, what is, you know, sort of deeply troubling, as if things couldn't be otherwise, is that Mike Pence doesn't really, he hasn't really seemed to have the regard for the Republic. He has, you know, I think he's reported not to have spoken with the president since the last Wednesday. And so I don't know where his political constituency is within that party. Makes no sense.
How does a Biden administration, Dr. Woodward Burns, make things better after next Wednesday?
That's a tall order. We're in a period of constitutional rot, if not crisis. Again, right, we see a cheating of electoral rules. The refusal on a majority of the Republican House caucus to certify the Electoral College vote suggests at least that that caucus is not committed to playing by the rules of the game. This is like playing a game of Monopoly against someone who keeps stealing from the bank. The rules are really starting to fray. And so I think there needs to be some sense of constitutional reconstruction. Again, rebuilding the Voting Rights Act, being willing, say, to admit D.C. as a state, also considering jurisdiction stripping of the Supreme Court when passing some statutes, knowing that Trump has stacked the Supreme Court and the federal courts. I think alongside all of this, there's a really tall order of recovering from a serious economic downturn and, of course, from the coronavirus pandemic. It's going to have to be an extraordinarily busy first 100 days for the Biden administration in terms of simply rebuilding from the sheer raw damage that the Trump administration has brought over the last 4 years.
Same question quickly, Congresswoman Edwards. How does the Biden administration fix things?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know the soon-to-be president-elect Joe Biden, and what I know is he is, first of all, an eternal optimist, and he does still have relationships in the Senate. I do think that with the new leadership in the Senate, he's going to be able to move forward his the confirmations of his cabinet so that people can really get started. He knows government. Which is going to be incredibly helpful at a time when there was not really a successful transition. And I think that he's going to pick and choose his battles on things that he knows that he can win. I mentioned infrastructure before. There will be some democratic reforms, I think, that will move forward quickly. And then he's already going to have to present his budget probably in the second quarter of the year, I think, as he's announced. So there's a lot on that to-do list, but I think that Joe Biden at least has some level of respect that is going to allow people to calm a little bit and move forward. But, you know, it's going to be it's a tall order for any incoming president, and this incoming president is facing challenges like no other president has faced.
Indeed not. Yeah. Former Maryland Congresswoman Donna Edwards and Howard University political science professor Dr. Robinson Woodward Burns, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your insight on this program. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this historic Wednesday, January 13th, 2021. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.